presented by DogNation.com in partnership with the AJC. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
G-Day is on Saturday, and our spring coverage here at DogNation.com continues. Make sure you check it out all week long here at DogNation.com, brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. We are united. Georgia United Credit Union, join us. And as a way of kind of getting us closer to G-Day coming up on Saturday, another scrimmage for UGA this past Saturday. And when it was all said and done, Kirby Smart had kind of a lot to say, talking about all the things that he saw on the practice field throughout the day, throughout the week. We'll sort of deal with some of that. But here to start this week, the name in particular that I want to talk about is Georgia running back Nick Chubb. Because I think some of the things that Smart had to say about Chubb on Saturday, I think this ought to get Georgia fans pretty excited about what Chubb might bring to the field with him here in 2017, even if we don't get to see a lot of this during the G-Day scrimmage coming up this upcoming weekend. Let me give you a little taste of this. Kirby Smart was asked about Chubb, and he talked about the ways in which Chubb is different this spring than what we saw from him a year ago when he was obviously still recovering from his injury. Here's how Kirby Smart talked about this on Saturday.
He's a different guy this spring compared to last spring for obvious reasons, but I think that you know more about last fall by what you see this spring out of Nick, that he's a lot closer to 100%. He's certainly got a lot more burst and power.
So listen, when you look at the that quote that you just heard from Kirby Smart, there's a couple things. The one obvious point here is last spring, we didn't even know what we'd see from Nick Chubb on the field in 2016. He was still in the midst of recovering from what was a pretty horrific injury. And if you remember, if you were listening to Dog Nation Daily a year ago, we kind of tracked and chronicled how Kirby Smart's opinion of Chubb kind of changed over the course of months. When he first took the job, you know, maybe, you know, for the most part, kind of skeptical about how much Chubb might be able to really contribute. Then over the course of those months, we saw Kirby Smart get slightly more and more optimistic with each passing month about exactly what Nick Chubb was bringing to the table there. So from this spring to last spring, obviously a completely different guy. But how about in particular, though, the point that Kirby Smart brings up at the end of that clip there, that we know more about 2016 by seeing Nick Chubb on the field here in spring of 2017? That in particular is something that I think is incredibly interesting, because when we look back to Nick Chubb from a year ago, what we know is it was not a great season for Chubb. If you check the stats out, what you see is a guy who was a far cry from what he had been early in his Georgia career. He did have 1,130 yards, but only averaged 5 yards a carry a season ago, only found the end zone 8 times. That's just one more touchdown than he had in the injury-shortened season of 2015. But you hear from Kirby Smart there that the explanation for that season may be the health, at least somewhat, from Nick Chubb. Now, I know there was also some issues going on with the Georgia offensive line, but apparently part of that limited productivity from Chubb last season was injury-related. That's what we take from what Kirby Smart just said a year ago. And for Georgia fans in their mind to kind of think back to the 2014 season, what Nick Chubb looked like as a freshman before he'd had any bouts with injuries, well, you remember, oh, yeah, more than 1,500 yards rushing, averaging 7 yards a carry that season, averaged 8.1 yards a carry in 2015 before the injury went down. And maybe based on the way that Smart is talking about Chubb in the clip that you just heard there, maybe that's the kind of thing that Georgia fans could see return to form here in 2017, the Nick Chubb that we all remember before he dealt with the horrible injury that he suffered at Tennessee in 2015. But that's not the only thing that Georgia fans should potentially be excited about when it comes to Nick Chubb. Yes, he's healthier, and yes, he's displaying that at practice, but he's also apparently working on another aspect of his game, an aspect that we saw a little bit from him as a freshman, but haven't seen much since then. Listen to what Kirby Smart says here that he's pushing Chubb to do here during the spring. Here's Kirby once again from Saturday.
The guy's really fast, physical, hard to tackle. His big roadblock has been for him to really work on catching the ball out of the backfield even better and becoming a weapon that way. And he's done a good job of that in the last two scrimmages.
Yeah, catching the football out of the backfield, this is really a twofold issue of interest for Georgia fans. On the one hand, you want to see a guy like Nick Chubb contributing and getting his hands on the football as much as possible. And it makes you think back to that freshman season for Chubb in 2014 when he did have 18 catches. just 4 in the injury-shortened season of 2015, had just 5 last year in 2016. So, yeah, Chubb with the football in a lot of interesting ways. That's just fun for Georgia football fans. But what's maybe more interesting and important than that is the fact that you're talking about getting Chubb involved in this way suggests that maybe here in 2017, Jim Chaney really is going to be the more creative version of an offensive coordinator, the way that Georgia fans hoped they'd see that from him in 2016. As you know, this offseason, that's been one of the most full-throated criticisms of the Georgia program is just how limited Georgia's offense was a year ago. A lot of the blame for that rests with Chaney, but maybe the idea that Chaney's going to be a different guy and that the Georgia offense is going to have a different look in 2017, maybe that just isn't lip service. Maybe that's the kind of thing that Georgia fans can really expect when it comes to this fall. However, one word of caution on all of this, though. The better, new and improved, healthier Nick Chubb, catching the ball out of the backfield, running with authority between the tackles, the guy that we hope to see this season when the games take place, I guess there is a chance we don't see that on full display necessarily on G-Day on Saturday, because something else that Kirby Smart did talk about this weekend is that right now he and Sony Michel, the other star running back from Georgia, those are players that Kirby Smart knows a lot about. And having these guys in the known category means you don't have to push them too much during some of the scrimmages like the ones that Georgia's had over the last two Saturdays. Here's Kirby Smart once again.
I think he and Sony both are a known quantity. Somebody that's played 3 years in this conference over that amount of time. We certainly have those guys out there doing everything with everybody else, but they're not going to get as many totes as some of the younger guys.
Yeah, so that's been true during the scrimmages. Even more than a week ago, the one from two Saturdays ago, when I guess it was reported that maybe Chubb didn't have any carries at all during that day, that they were truly focusing in on the other running backs. And for G-Day, if that's kind of the way this continues again with Kirby Smart not getting these two star running backs, the two known running backs involved as much, I think Georgia fans would be okay with that, especially if it ends up being a scenario where the passing game has opened up more. You can examine the maturity and growth of Jacob Eason. You can see what Jake Fromm's bringing to the table. I think that's something that Georgia fans would be okay with. But the bottom line for me on this is, whether Georgia fans get to see it on G-Day or not, when it comes to Nick Chubb, the guy drawing praise from Kirby Smart, here to start the week here on Dog Nation Daily, this is the kind of thing that Georgia fans are excited about. It reminds me of what we talked about on Dog Nation Daily a couple weeks ago, when ESPN pointed out Chubb as being the workout warrior in Georgia's team. And who could deny that? For a guy like Chubb to go from where he was in 2017, dealing with the, or I should say 2015, dealing with the bad injury, to the point here is in 2017, coming back to college with unfinished business to prove to NFL scouts exactly what he's made of, and prove to Georgia fans that the guy who was so dominant as a freshman in 2014, that guy may be back in 2017. If that's the case, then I think the Georgia football program is going to benefit greatly from him. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. It's great to have you with us and be a part of our spring coverage at DogNation.com, brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. And of course, when you think about Georgia United Credit Union, a couple things come to mind. There are a lot of financial questions that you wake up to each day. Am I in the right job? Is this the right time to buy a house? How do I manage my student loans? Well, who you turn to matters when it comes to your money. You need a financial partner like Georgia United Credit Union who's committed to helping you succeed. A partner who knows the unique stresses you face when it comes to finances. At Georgia United, the things that are important to you become just as important to us. Shared strength is the confidence of knowing you're going to get a great deal on your vehicle loan, consistently strong returns on deposits, and home loan products designed with you in mind. All made possible by neighbors, uniting with neighbors to reach common goals. We're committed to putting you first. We know that the more you succeed, the more the entire community benefits. That's what makes us so much more than just a bank. We are united. Georgia United Credit Union, join us. And it's going to be a fun episode here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll tell you about all that coming up in just a moment. For now, though, let me remind you that now just 193 days away from Georgia, Florida in Jacksonville this October. Of course, we count it down each and every day here on Dog Nation Daily. We call it our Gator Hater Countdown because we believe a good Georgia fan is a Gator Hater first and foremost. And if you think that too, please go to shopdognation.com. Check out our Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts. You can see those there. We think they're awesome, and we've enjoyed selling so many of those, hearing so many positive compliments and feedback from UGA fans who are getting their own here. I look forward to seeing a bunch of those on social media here this summer and heading into the fall and the big showdown in Jacksonville in October when we think the Georgia Bulldogs are going to put themselves on top in the SEC East and kind of correct the record in what has been a one-sided rivalry here between Georgia and Florida for far too long. We think Kirby Smart's going to do his part to change that, and that's one of the reasons why we love these Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts there at shopdognation.com. Okay, we have a very busy show coming up for you today. Let me give you a little idea of what's coming up. It's a Monday, so in about 5 minutes, we are going to bring on Chip Towers. We're going to talk to him about everything that happened at the spring scrimmage on Saturday, a look ahead to a G-Day. Chip's also in South Bend previewing the Notre Dame game. We'll do that with Chip Towers as well, and he had a great Next Generation piece on Jeremiah Holloman, so we'll get into all that with Chip Towers. Then later in the show, we're going to bring on a second guest today because there's some big recruiting news to get to. We're going to get to Jeremy Birmingham, who covers Ohio State recruiting for landof10.com. Now, if you're wondering, why would we have an Ohio State guy here on Dog Nation Daily, the reason is simple. Ohio State had its spring game on Saturday. Zamir White was there. We'll get the perspective from Birmingham about what White's presence in Columbus means for that recruiting battle the Dogs are waging for the five-star running back. Also, Brenton Cox, as Jeff Sintel reported Sunday night on Dog Nation at DogNation.com. The big defensive end from Stockbridge, he's making his announcement a little less than a week from today, coming up next Sunday. He was also in Columbus over the weekend. It's supposed to be Ohio State and Georgia for Brenton Cox, a one-on-one battle there. We'll find out what he has to say about that, Jeremy Birmingham, about how Ohio State fits into Brenton Cox's plan. So it's a busy conversation coming up with Jeremy Birmingham as he gives us some insight on two big UGA recruits here for 2018, Brenton Cox and Zamir White. Before any of that, though, there is another big recruiting story we have to get to. As I record this here on a Monday morning, by the time you hear it, you may already know what I'm about to talk about right now. But we've been following Braden Fehoko for a while, the defensive tackle, most recently from Texas Tech, making his transfer decision and announcement here on this Monday. Coming down to a handful of SEC schools, Georgia obviously in the mix, along with Auburn and LSU, and I guess to a certain extent maybe Ole Miss as well. We've been following this closely because when he's eligible to play in 2018, he's the kind of defensive tackle, defensive lineman that can make a big impact on the Georgia program. For a little more insight into exactly what Fehoko potentially brings to the table, here's how Jeff Sintel explained this when he joined us on Friday's show.
I'll let everybody kind of get into my playbook here a little bit. I've heard that, you know, this guy is a great get, no doubt about that. He started 25 games at Texas Tech in his first two seasons. And the main thing there is he will sit out 2017 no matter what because of the transfer issue there. So somebody's going to get probably, I think, a grown man from Hawaii who, to me, projects as a one-and-done guy at defensive tackle, especially given his age and his already production at the college level. But he will be a mature defensive lineman, no doubt about that.
Yeah, so listen, this is the reason why we've paid so much attention to this over the course of the last few weeks, because as Jeff explained, this is a guy that's got a lot of college experience, and he's probably an NFL prospect there at that defensive line position. So even if George were only to get him for 1 year, just that 2018 year, it's the kind of guy that can make Georgia a really good along the defensive line in a year where the Georgia program also needs to be really good, because the expectations for Georgia may be somewhat meager in 2017. Most fans would be okay with only winning the East. By the time you get to 2018, the expectations have grown even more to the point now where Georgia fans are going to expect this team to be in the college football playoff conversation and listed right there in the preseason as among the very top favorites in the Southeastern Conference. So to get to that status and sort of live up to those expectations, you have to have all hands on deck, and a guy like Fehoko is the guy that could certainly make Georgia better in that regard. That's one of the reasons we've been paying this close attention to it. However, Jeff Sintel also pointed out on Friday that while Georgia fans are paying attention and Georgia fans are hoping for the best, the tea leaves may not exactly be pointing in UGA's direction on this. Here's why, Jeff Sintel once again.
The way I view his recruitment is he takes a visit, but like LSU and Auburn have long, maybe at least the last 4 or 5 weeks, have seemed like the teams to beat there. And I thought it was curious how he had already announced his commitment date prior to when he takes his official visit to Georgia, a couple of weeks in advance of his visit to Georgia. That, to me, only strikes me as something that does not bode well for the red and black. It seems like he's already really comfortable with his decision already, and this might be one of those last visits. And in this case, I don't think this is a situation where the last visit is something that's being saved, like a Luther Vandross song or something like that, in terms of saving the best for last.
Listen, Jeff very well may be right about that, and I love the Luther Vandross reference that you get to him, and if you were get from him, and if you were listening to the show on Friday, I kind of gave him a hard time for sort of bringing a dose of reality into discussion where I think UGA fans would prefer to be optimistic. And at 4 p.m. here today, when Fehoko makes his announcement, Jeff Sintel very well may have been proved correct that, yeah, maybe this was just a check-the-box visit, and he had already made his decision between Auburn or LSU as far as where he's going to go. However, I am going to hold out hope here. I'm going to hold out a reason for optimism because, A, I think Kirby Smart knows how important a decision like this would be. It's a chance for Trey Scott to show what he brings to the table as a first-year defensive line coach here, and it's just an opportunity. And while it may be a long shot when it comes to Braden Fehoko, the fact of the matter is I think Georgia fans are glad to know that UGA at least has a shot, and we'll see how that plays out over the course of the rest of the day. For now, though, we'll put the recruiting aside, get ready to welcome in Chip Towers. He's in South Bend, Indiana, previewing Notre Dame. We'll talk Jeremiah Holloman and get a look ahead at G-Day this upcoming Saturday as well. Busy conversation with Chip. Glad to have him and you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And as I said, a lot to talk about with Chip Towers here today on Dog Nation Daily. We're certainly glad to have him with us. And Chip, before we get into the next generation piece that you've recently written on Jeremiah Holloman, before we get on to what's happening there on the ground in South Bend with Georgia slated to make that trip there in September, let me talk to you about G-Day here just for a moment, because this is the last time that you and I will talk before the G-Day game on Saturday. So can you give me just sort of a thumbnail synopsis of what you're looking for from Georgia here this weekend?
Well, you know, Brandon, it's like most spring games. I mean, there's a lot that you want to see, but probably a little bit more that you're going to see. I mean, I'm very eager to see, you know, Jake Fromm at quarterback in a competitive situation. And you know, to that end, Jacob Eason as well. You know, the general consensus that you're getting on Jacob Eason right now is that he's had a really good spring and has made strides since last season. So you kind of want to see that, you know, you want to see evidence of that. You want to see more of Nick Chubb and Sony Michelle. You know, Nick Chubb, the glimpses we've had, you know, running around without any kind of brace and looking to me a lot more like the, you know, the swift and nimble back we saw as a freshman and sophomore. So we'll see that. But we probably won't see much of it, you know, because it is a spring game. There's going to be a certain level of protection that the coaching staff has to be responsible for, you know, on some of those players. So you're going to see a little bit, but probably not a lot. And so what you're going to see a lot of is those guys that kind of on the next line, you know, guys like Brian Herrion, who's had a great spring at tailback, and Elijah Holyfield, and, you know, Tay Crowder, inside linebacker, and a lot of these young defensive backs and wide receivers. I think that'll probably be the most telling aspect of it is what did those guys look like.
I thought was interesting in Kirby Smart's press conference on Saturday, I had a chance to go back and watch that. One of the things that's going to make G-Day different, maybe this is true every year and I just don't remember, but one of the things that's going to make G-Day different from a lot of other SEC spring games is a lot of these other teams put their number one offense against the number two defense. Georgia's going to go number one against number one, and that's a different look that you get from some SEC schools, which will make the evaluation of Georgia and what Jacob Eason looks like or Jake Fromm or anybody else, it's going to make the evaluation different knowing that you're matching up the best on the best, supposedly.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a bit of a change for Kirby. You talked about that this past weekend when we were over there, that you know, one of the questions to him was what did he feel like was different for him this year than last year? And he said as far as spring ball goes, and he says the level of competitiveness. You know, he has definitely tried to keep the level of competitiveness high throughout this entire spring. And I think, you know, continue into the G-Day game. So, yeah, you know, there's some risk that comes with that. You know, sometimes you're not going to look so great. You know, your offense is always going to look better when it goes against the two or three defense and vice versa. You know, so there's I would expect there'll be a lot of stalemates and things like that. And, you know, the other side of it, you're not going to see a whole bunch of wrinkles either. You know, probably everything's going to be base defense, base offense, because, you know, after all, you know,
Notre Dame and everybody else will be watching these spring games and keeping the tape of it as well as everybody else. So, you know, I imagine it'll be very competitive when it comes to the hand-to-hand combat aspect of football.
Yeah, you mentioned Notre Dame. We'll get a thought from you on the Irish, what it's like there in South Bend coming up in just a moment. One more thing on G-Day before we move on to another subject. I'm fascinated by the attendance conversation. I thought 93,000 was a huge accomplishment for UGA a year ago. I obviously expect much less than that here this season. But do you have a prediction about where you think the attendance is going to kind of level off at on this upcoming Saturday?
Well, you know, Georgia always traditionally had been kind of I don't want to say low in attendance because they're better than a lot of places, but you know, usually 25 to 45,000 has kind of been a standard for Georgia over many, many years. Now, obviously last year that was an institutional initiative that Georgia put together for 93K Day. And yeah, I haven't seen anything approaching that at all this year, you know, in terms of, you know, the hype and the public relations machine that you heard last year on 93K. I haven't heard nearly as much of that. So I wouldn't anticipate a sellout, but I'm sure you read the comments of Kirby from this past weekend.
Sure.
He thinks that Georgia fans should be challenged for it to be a sellout all the time, that it's important for recruiting. Georgia will have a lot of major prospects there in attendance, as many as they can get there. There's other spring games going on as well. But he claims that it had a big effect on that class of 2017, which was obviously ranked top three, top five in the country. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I don't expect 93,000. I could be surprised. But I would imagine it'll be better than we traditionally see from Georgia. So my point is if you had to give me an over and under, you know, I'd say definitely over 50,000. We'll see. I've heard a little bit of buzz about it from fans. Not
sure.
Not nearly as much as you did this time last year, though.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that's going to be an interesting kind of subplot to a watch play out on Saturday. Before we get to Notre Dame here, Chip, let me ask you one more question. You know, proposed rule changes, I guess these things are getting very close to being in full effect here. The idea of an early signing period for recruiting, adding a 10th assistant coach, and some of the other things that are kind of sort of like lumped into that legislation. Just kind of a sort of overarching, open-ended question here. Do you think these proposed changes for college football that we're likely going to see, is this a net positive or maybe a net negative for the sport in your mind?
I think it's a positive step. I honestly, Brandon, I don't know a ton about it on the inside. I mean,
that makes two of us.
The surface level of it, and I've always thought that football needed an early signing period because there are so many of these kids, and I would hazard to guess a grand majority know where they're going to go. Some of them get confused late because of the lack of an early signing period, I think, and the real push, I call it hot boxing part that comes at the end of college football recruiting, and when you see a lot of those late changes, I think it'll take a lot of the pressure off kids. I think the ones who know where they want to go, but might not be able to qualify for early enrollment. I think it's a tremendous relief for those guys. Now, I don't know that. I don't know if it's going to make it any better for the coaches at all. I mean, you got an early signing period, and the argument is that they won't have to babysit the guys that they know that are coming their way anymore. But the way is competitive college football is they'll just put that energy into something else, whether it's pursuing 2018 or 2019 kids or going to find somebody else. They're not going to be working any less. So as always, any kind of legislation like this should be aimed at the players. And in that regard, I like it both for the 10th assistant and for the early signing period, because if you look at football, they have 10 on-field assistants and they have 50 other support personnel, but nine on-field assistants right now. And that's the lowest percentage of all the sports if you look at how many scholarships you have. So I think they can use a 10th on-field guy. But then again, as you know, I mean, Georgia has, 50 support personnel.
Sure.
Right now. So they're getting plenty of attention one way or another.
You're at South Bend. Obviously, Georgia got that great non-conference game coming up this September with the Irish. And, you know, it's interesting how different these two schools are probably in the approach of this game. On the one hand, for Georgia, this is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be in South Bend. I doubt any of us will ever go back there to see Georgia play there once again. And yet for Notre Dame, they play these kinds of games as a somewhat national program all the time. Have you found some excitement building there in South Bend for the arrival of the Georgia Bulldogs here this September? What's the kind of attitude around the program about this upcoming game?
Well, not yet, and I'll explain that, Brandon. Is they're actually on Easter break here
okay.
at the University of Notre Dame, and the Fighting Irish take their Easter holiday very serious.
The
campus is, there's a lot of people around, but there's not any classes today. It's the last day of the Easter holiday. Classes will resume tomorrow, and there doesn't seem to be quite as much excitement on this end as there is on that end. But I'll have you know, Brandon, now I'm standing as we do this interview between Touchdown Jesus and the Newt Rotney gate
wow.
at Notre Dame Stadium. So I tried to have myself well positioned, you know, for this interview right now. And I'd forgotten about this, actually, until I got here. You know, they're in the middle of a $400 million. Well, I should say not in the middle, at the end of a $400 million renovation and expansion at Notre Dame Stadium, and that's a, you know, on cue. I don't know if you can hear it. They've got some kind of a horn going off in the stadium that sounds like the old World War II bomb alerts or something. Yeah, right before this, that's like, are you serious? And it's been going ever since. I don't know if you can hear it in the background, but. I mean, there is a lot of construction going on around here, and it looks to me, I mean, they may be scrambling to get this baby finished before Georgia comes on September 17th. I talked briefly with the manager of the hotel where I'm staying, which is right next to campus, so you'll find it no surprise that, you know, they're sold out for Georgia weekend. There's not really all that many hotels in the South Bend area in general, so... And obviously Chicago is going to be a kind of a home base, not just for the Dog Nation, but for DogNation.com as well.
Sure.
As you know, we'll be camping out there, and there's a lot of buzz among the Georgia people. I mean, Georgia only gets 10,000 seats for this game. I know I've heard, based on what I've heard, there must be 40,000 Georgia fans planning on coming. So I don't know where they're going to put them all or what they're all going to do, but there's certainly a fever pitch among the Georgia people for this game, and as there should be, because we'll never be back here, I don't think, and it'll be just as exciting when Notre Dame comes to Athens in the subsequent season.
Yeah, without a doubt, Chip. I think you're absolutely right about that. One thing about Notre Dame that's kind of interesting is, you know, from a college football fan's perspective, a lot of storylines around that team. You know, Brian Kelly trying to hold on to his job. He's clearly a coach in the hot seat. Sounds like Brandon Wimbush, their starting quarterback, is one of these guys, you know, among the sort of highest recruited, most impressive incoming quarterbacks they've had in quite some time there. You know, in addition to the fact they're playing Georgia this season, I think Notre Dame as a football program is going to be pretty interesting this year.
Well, it is. I mean, you touched on some of it, but I mean Brian Kelly has completely revamped his coaching staff, which, of course, included defensive coordinator Brian Van Gorder this time last year. He was fired during the middle of the season and actually joined Georgia as a consultant toward the end of the this past year. I would imagine Georgia will do everything they can to keep that relationship going, because I'm sure he can help them out a little bit on what Notre Dame does, and certainly from a personnel standpoint, they've got a quarterback change. I would definitely say that, you know, the overarching theme when it comes to Notre Dame football is change, because there is a lot of it right now, that chiefly at the quarterback position. That's going to be – they got a huge quarterback battle, and they're actually playing their spring game, the blue and gold, on the same Saturday as the G-Day game.
Okay.
I will not hang around here for that. I'm gonna come back for the red and black game. But I am going to get an audience with Brian Kelly this week, and I have several interviews set up. So you'll be able to learn a little bit more, as I do, you know, about the Notre Dame Fighting Irish on DogNation.com this week.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. Chip, let me finish up with this, if you don't mind. You wrote a great Next Generation piece on Jeremiah Holloman. I was fascinated by that. And the one name that comes up a lot, and when you talk about Jeremiah Holloman, is his brother LJ. How big of a impact on Jeremiah's recruitment and ultimate, you know, signature at Georgia did the fact that UJ was also willing to make room for LJ as a preferred walk-on? How big of an impact did that make in Holloman's recruitment, you think?
Yeah, I think that was a big deal, you know, because, I mean, Holloman was a guy that at one point, you know, I believe he was committed to Michigan. You know, Miami was hot and heavy after him. Tennessee, Auburn, you know, he was a guy who played on Cam Newton's 7x7. 7-versus-7 team for 2 years in a row. So obviously, you know, Cam Newton and Auburn had a strong influence on it. All those schools toward the end were offering some kind of aid or another for LJ. Lafayette is his given name, and I tell you what, you know, having sat in their home there in Covington, he's, you know, he's the spitting image of his brother, and physically they look just alike. He's fully 6'2". I understand Jeremiah is 6'2½, a little bit stockier, a little bit stronger, not quite as fast, but he's very physical guy, which is something Kirby said he's really liked about J.J. Holloman in spring camp, is being physical, willing to get out there and take on defensive backs and linebackers and block the assignments. LJ's going to be really good at that. And as his coach told me, his high school coach told me that he wouldn't be surprised at all to see LJ being special teams player of the year for Georgia.
Wow.
A year from now. He's just that kind of guy. I mean, he's a good athlete. You don't find many guys that are 6'2", you know, 205 and can run a little bit. You can find something to do with guys like that, and LJ is another one of them.
Yeah, without a doubt, Chip. I think that's really well said. We'll look forward to reading that next generation piece on Jeremiah Holloman. I've already read it. I would encourage everybody to check it out. And all the great coverage you're going to have of the Georgia-Notre Dame game from South Bend this week. And, of course, our Dog Nation Invasion coming up later on in September, brought to you by U.S. Auto Sales, R.S. Andrews, and our friends at Kroger. We'll also see you back in Athens for G-Day this weekend, Chip, and look forward to talking to you next week in the podcast as well. Thanks so much for your time.
See you, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So the one question I wanted to ask Chip about Holloman more so than anything else, and some of y'all may know, and if you do and you're watching us live on video, go ahead and drop a comment in the comment section here on our Facebook Live. But when it comes to Jeremiah Holloman, I've sort of always called him Jeremiah, but I hear Chip about half the time call him JJ. I hear Jeff about half the time call him JJ, maybe even more than that. Do we know? Are we going to... Is he going to sort of morph into J.J. Holloman by the time his Georgia career is over? I mean, we see this happen with guys where the name that they have kind of coming into school, by the time they leave, it kind of sort of turns into something else. Is he going to be a J.J. Holloman, or is he going to be a Jeremiah Holloman? He can obviously choose whatever he wants as his own name. I do think J.J. Holloman sounds like a really good wide receiver. I mean, you think about, you know, like in sports, you want the good-sounding name. J.J. Holloman just sounds like a wide receiver's name. So maybe if it sort of morphs into the initial name, the J.J., maybe that'll work out well for him. The other thing that you hear from Chip, and by the way, we'll start the SEC through here, brought to you by SECCountry.com. Make sure you check out myself and Mike Johnson at SEC Country Live on the SEC Country Facebook page today at 3 p.m. Eastern time. But, you know, the thing we get into with Chip there is also these proposed rule changes coming to college football in the very near future. At least they're set to come. You know, they're not official, but it's probably going to be approved. An early signing period taking place in December, the addition of a 10th coach. I know a lot of coaches are also worried about the blockade on high school coaches moving up to a college program connected to a recruit that they have. A lot of different kind of change and twists and turns here. Sounds like from Chip, based on what we just heard, he thinks the overall this is a net positive for college football. For me, I'm not quite so sure about that. I'm not in favor of an early signing period. And I think if you're a fan of the Georgia Bulldogs, you shouldn't be in favor of an early signing period either. I think the early signing period is put in place to benefit the programs who are not the blue blood recruiters. The better you are as kind of a blue blood recruiter, the more likely you are to be able to work the signing calendar the way that it exists now up and on National Signing Day and flip someone else's commits. The only schools that really benefit from an early signing period are the ones that aren't doing the flipping on signing day. They're having their players flipped from them. So the sort of second-tier B-level recruits here, they are really the one, or recruiting schools, I should say, they are really the ones that are most likely to benefit from the early signing period. For Georgia, this is just going to potentially, you know, harm the Dogs' efforts at getting recruits more so than it's going to help it. And it's as Chip did, I think, accurately point out, This is not going to make the life of a coach any easier. Those work requirements aren't going to change. It's just going to be the next year's recruits that you're recruiting. Once the early signing period is over there in December. And as far as like the hysteria of recruiting, that's not going to change either. I saw one of the analysts, and I think it was one of the recruiting analysts that covers Georgia. I forget which one, but he brought up a good point. So what's going to end up being the new hysteria is going to be when a kid almost signs early and then does, and now that's going to be extended into February. And I think that is going to happen, and I think the madness that is National Signing Day is just going to continue because of that. And by the way, if I was friends or related to a big-time high school football recruit, I would advise him not to use the early signing period. I'd advise him to extend his past the February date and really hold the program's feet to the fire to see if they're going to keep those promises to him in terms of coaches and playing time and everything else. I wouldn't necessarily be using this early signing period if I had it. Now, speaking of recruiting, a couple of interesting recruiting notes to get to here before we welcome in Jeremy Birmingham to Dog Nation Daily. First of all, Florida gets some more news. Gets a 2018 commit from four-star athlete Iverson Clement. Now, I guess Gator's going to use him as a running back here, and maybe that'll work out well for them. But what's interesting to me is it's another example of Florida with some pretty good momentum here on the recruiting trail. We talked about the Gators moving up to the number one position for the 2019 class last week, now finding some more success here with the 2018 class. I certainly don't want to see Jim McElwain get his footing there as a recruiter, but hard to argue that Florida having a little bit more good news here early in recruiting than certainly we saw from them the last couple of springs. So maybe that's something to watch for there. I'm a big believer that the opportunity for Georgia exists in the SEC East right now, largely because of what Florida has not done on the recruiting trail. And obviously, the more that the Gators start to recruit back at the level we're used to seeing them at, the more challenge that's going to be for Georgia going forward. Another recruiting note to get to here, Kentucky gets a win. Three-star wide receiver Kadarius Gaskin going to the Wildcats. I bring this up because just another example of Mark Stoops utilizing a couple geographic locations of his advantage. Going into Cincinnati and getting some kids from the Ohio area, that's worked out well from Kentucky, and now able to go down to Florida, a place that he knows after having been defensive coordinator of the Florida State, getting a young receiver here and there from the Gators. Kentucky looks to be a bit of a program on the rise in the SEC right now because of the work it's doing in recruiting, and we'll make that your SEC through. Now, speaking of recruiting, let's get ready to welcome in Jeremy Birmingham from landof10.com. We'll talk to him about some of the big names that Georgia's chasing down that Ohio State had on campus this weekend. And as we say hello to Jeremy Birmingham here, he is covering Ohio State recruiting for landof10.com. And, of course, it was a busy weekend in Columbus with the spring game on Saturday. A lot of names on campus there, some of which interest to Georgia fans. Before we get into those, Jeremy, let me say thank you for being on the program today. Welcome back to Dog Nation Daily. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Doing really well. Glad to have you on. Let me start with Zamir White. Obviously, you cover recruiting well, and you know what a big name that is down here in the South and just how much Georgia fans are hoping to have White as a member of the 2018 class. Did you get any kind of impression from him or anyone close to him how his visit to Columbus for the spring game went this past weekend? Did Ohio State have much of a chance to impress him?
Well, I mean, it was their last chance to impress him. Zamir is a guy that's been on campus with Ohio State three times in the last year, three times since June. So there is obviously some real interest there. But in February, he had dropped his top four schools, and Ohio State wasn't on it. So I think they kind of felt like, hey, this is the one chance to get him up here before maybe a decision gets made to really try to stem the tide there and get back into the race with Georgia and Clemson and North Carolina. I think that they did that from what I've understood from talking to people around Ohio State. They really felt like they showed him exactly how he fits in at Ohio State. And if there were some questions and concerns from his family about, just the lifestyle at Ohio State, it's a little bit further away than some of the SEC schools. And I think that was a potential concern. But I watched as Urban Meyer and Tony Alford, Ohio State's running backs coach, made Zamir a priority for the entire game, making sure that they were spending time with him. Urban Meyer coming over in the middle of the spring game while the play's going on the field to run over to the sideline to spend some time with Zamir and his family. But the question is whether or not they can beat Georgia out. And I've heard from previous folks that Zamir had talked on other visits and told other coaching staffs that he was heading to Georgia. He did not tell that to the Ohio State staff, I can assure you. The Buckeyes coaching staff is looking for one more running back in the class of 2018, and they're not going to settle for someone that's lower than Zamir White or potentially Lorenzo Lingard, a Miami commitment on that on their big board. So it's a big push, and we'll see if it made a difference. I would hesitate to say that I'm confident that Ohio State has jumped ahead or even put themselves in a winning position, but they took their shot.
That's interesting. We'll look forward to watching that one play out. Another guy that kind of overlaps some Georgia-Ohio State interest is Brenton Cox, the defensive end from the Atlanta area. He's going to announce Sunday. That's a little less than a week from now. He was also, I believe, in Columbus over the weekend. Expects to be in Athens for G-Day on Saturday. Could you handicap the race right now for Brenton Cox between these two schools?
Yeah, the thing is, there's an old adage in recruiting that says, watch what they do and not what they say. And Brenton Cox has made two trips to Ohio in the last month, which is not something you do just for fun, especially as a 17-year-old, you know, teenager, high school student. You don't just make that drive twice in a month unless you're seriously interested in the school. We've known for a while it's pretty much an Ohio State and Georgia race, but his parents had not been up to Ohio, and he got his chance to get his mom up to Columbus this weekend, and from all accounts, talking to him, she said that she really loved it up there and really had a really good rapport with Urban Meyer. The Buckeyes obviously were not expecting him to make a decision as quickly as nobody else was, so the timing of it is certainly interesting and would appear to lean in Ohio State's favor. But he's still going to go back to Georgia this weekend, and he's already had his mind kind of made up. He said that he has an idea of where he's going, and he just wants to make one last trip to make sure. You know, and to me, I still think he's going to end up at Georgia, despite the fact that the Buckeyes are going to lose four defensive ends this year, and there's a really good opportunity to play early there in Columbus, especially for Larry Johnson. But if there's one thing that I think can push the Buckeyes over the top, it is that depth issue at defensive end. Again, the Buckeyes will lose Jalen Holmes, Sam Hubbard, and Tyquan Lewis all after this season, so there's going to be a wide-open competition there at defensive end. And I think it's just Larry Johnson's history of getting guys to the NFL, and I think that's something that Brenton's really interested in.
I want to talk to you about Max Ray for a moment. Obviously, he was a part of Georgia's 2018 class, and then he wasn't. He decommitted, and over the weekend, he also committed to Ohio State. And there's a pocket of Georgia fans who are going to say, well, I don't want to hear anything about Ray. Once he decided not to be a Bulldog, then who cares where he goes? But I do think bringing some closure to this story is probably interesting for Georgia fans. Did you get an indication from him, or has anyone yet gotten an indication about, you know, what it is that made him decide he liked Ohio State better than his Georgia commitment, something he'd actually had been holding on to for quite some time? What is the end of this story for Georgia fans about why Ray ended up in Columbus instead of Athens?
Well, from what I can understand and from what I've ascertained, it's just really just a matter of fit. I think that there was some questions about where he fits in the offensive line at Georgia. There's a number of tackles on the roster there ahead of him that are very young. Ohio State does not have that happening there. And I think ultimately it's just a guy that doesn't really want to deal with the recruiting process. When Georgia, I think Georgia had asked him to potentially consider moving inside and playing guard because of their depth at tackle. And that's not something he's interested in. And so then once that happens, you kind of take a step back and say, hey, maybe I need to reevaluate the whole process. He decommitted the same day he visited Alabama in March. And so that was kind of hey, maybe this is a Crimson Tide win here. But Ohio State was able to really just give him a different sense of comfort when he was in Columbus, and his family was up with him last weekend, the weekend before Easter, and they just really loved it. He told me that he knew he was going to commit to Ohio State before he left campus, and decided to do it on Saturday, the day of the Ohio State spring game, because he wanted to help provide a little boost for the energy of the spring game. So the Buckeyes they had only offered him 2 or 3 days after he decommitted from Georgia. So it was not a long relationship. It was just a matter of him feeling the fit in Columbus was perfect for him.
So real quick follow-up to that. So sometimes it almost feels like a spin zone type thing when you say, hey, you know, when a guy decommits, well, he could have played tackle here anyway. I didn't seem to hear a lot of that from Georgia fans before the decommitment. You heard a lot more of that after the decommitment. But it sounds like you think there is an element of that that could have been true, that the success that Georgia had in recruiting tackles for 2017 did create a bit of a log jam for a 2018 prospect, kind of looking at guys who would be a year ahead of him on the pecking order there.
Yeah, there's this idea in recruiting that if a kid looks at a depth chart, he's afraid to compete, and that's absolutely ludicrous to suggest. Any player should be looking at what is his best route to get on the field. And Max is a guy who's been an offensive tackle, and if that's where he wants to play, and the schools that he talks to, I mean, he's 6'7", 300 pounds. He's got an offensive tackle's body. He's certainly not a guy that lacks in athleticism, and I think he felt that's where his future is best. And if Georgia wanted him at guard, which is what I've heard speculated, then it certainly makes sense for him to take a look around.
All right, last final question for you, Jeremy, and we certainly appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily. When we have guys who kind of bring an outside perspective into a recruiting, one of the questions we've been asking people a lot lately is, should Georgia fans be concerned? Because right now I can tell you they are. Only at two commits for the class of 2018. That's a far cry from the number three overall ranking that Georgia pulled for 2017. I know it's a long time to go before February, but there's not a lot of high four-star, big-time names kind of still out there on the board. As sort of an outside observer, how worried should a major program be about only having two commits for 2018, given the state of the rest of the race around the country right now?
Well, if I'm a Georgia fan, my concern is not necessarily the low number of commitments. My concern is that the country's top three quarterbacks, according to most rankings, are all in Georgia, and none of them are committed to Georgia. One's committed to Clemson, one's committed to Penn State, one's committed to Ohio State. That's a concern if I'm a Georgia fan, despite the fact that they have Jacob Eason and Jacob Fromm, on the roster. Those are the only two quarterbacks, and you're trying to push for a guy like Emory Jones, but you have the three top quarterbacks in the country in your state, and they're all leaving the state. That's a bit of a tough pill to swallow. I think, honestly, the reality is that Kirby Smart came in, and there was a lot of positive momentum when he took the job, and as there normally there's a coaching change, there's sort of a swell of emotion and support and guys jumping on board and saying, hey, we're going to be the group to fix this. But the reality is that, hey, the results on the field weren't entirely great a year ago, and I think people are kind of in a wait-and-see mode to see where things go with this new group. Georgia has as much talent as anybody in the country, in the state, and Kirby's reputation is really good. The recruits love him, so I don't think it's going to be a problem that lasts for too long. But there is certainly and understandably some feeling like, hey, maybe we should see how this season goes before we dive too far in.
He is at Birm on Twitter. That's BIRM. He is a great resource for recruiting. If you want to follow the twists and turns of the Samir White story, what's going to happen with Brenton Cox this upcoming Sunday, or any other time Georgia and Ohio State overlap with each other, hope you'll check out Jeremy Birmingham both online and at landof10.com. Jeremy, thanks for your time here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll look forward to having you on the program again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Good stuff there from Jeremy Birmingham. And I got to tell you, first of all, I hope people were able to stick with that and hear the full interview, because some really, really interesting stuff from him in terms of Zamir White, Brenton Cox, and others. But I'll also admit here, what he says about Max Ray is not what I would have expected to hear. You know, I always felt like there was a bit of, I called it like a spin zone situation, a rewriting of history when Ray decommitted. There was this groundswell of fans coming out to say, well, he wasn't good enough to play tackle at Georgia anyway, in comparison to Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson, some of the guys from the class of 2017. You know, it almost seems like Ohio State jumping on Ray would seem to be kind of an indictment of that statement. But there's Birmingham, who knows the Ohio State situation pretty well, saying maybe Georgia just does have a little more young depth at offensive tackle compared to what Georgia brings to the table. Still think Ray was a loss for UGA, but looking forward to the possibility of a few wins. Maybe Brenton Cox on Sunday, maybe Zamir White not too long after that. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.